They're probably one of the most beautiful domestic birds you can have, and they're the only free-ranging animals on our farm. They're peacocks, or more precisely, peafowl.
Welcome to the Homesteading Roller Coaster. My name is Ilaria, and in this podcast, I share my family's adventures on Tatum Hills Farm, our property on Ngunnawal Country, just outside of Canberra, Australia. We would like to acknowledge the traditional owners of country throughout Australia and recognise their continuing connection to land, waters and culture. We pay our respects to their elders, past, present and emerging. In this podcast, we discuss anything to do with farm life, homesteading, sustainable living, growing your own and much more. So let's get started.
Shortly after moving to our farm, we visited a zoo that had loads of peacocks free ranging around, and I decided it would be wonderful to be able to add some to our menagerie. I just checked online and very quickly realized there was a lady selling some babies just down the road, and that's how we got started. But before we go any further, it's probably a good idea to clarify some of the lingo that goes with keeping these birds. So although they're mostly known as peacocks, peacock is actually the name for the boys only. Collectively, they're called peafowl. And the girls, you've guessed it, they're peahens, and a peahen and a peacock produce pea chicks. So that's just so we're clear. Why would you want to keep them? Well, I'd like to be honest on that one. The only reason that I found that you might want to keep them for is their beauty. They are gorgeous. Even the girls, even though they're not as striking as the males, they are beautiful. The little crest, the way they move, and the girls, even though they're more on a brown palette, they do have a beautiful green sheen to their neck. And the boys, well, everybody knows what a boy looks like. They're fantastic. They're blue. They have their huge, long feathers. They're amazing. But really, that's it. They do eat insects, so potentially they can keep your garden free of pests. But let's be honest, they will scratch up your garden and eat all your lettuces long before where they're rid of pests. So if you have peacocks or peafowl free ranging on your property and you're trying to grow veggies, you will need to net your veggies. So not particularly good for the garden. They also have a very wide home range, so they're unlikely to stick to your garden long enough to really make a difference. They will, however, free range far and wide and possibly visit your neighbors. So they're definitely not a pet to have in suburbia, but even on larger properties, they do fly quite a distance. And so you do need to make sure that your neighbors will not be too annoyed to receive their visits. And the reason why they might be annoyed is because, oh my God, there is nothing like a peacock poo. They are massive and horribly smelly and squishy. And they have been voted by my family the most disgusting poo on our farm. And trust me, we have a wide variety of poos. So they completely win that contest, hands down, for the most horrific poos. And they love being with you because you feed them. So where will most of those poos land? On your front step, just so you can step on them when your shoes on your way to work. So not ideal. But they're beautiful, so we all put up with that. They're not a great singing bird either. They have a horrific call, both the boys and the girls. The boys in particular, it sounds like a strangled cat, so you wouldn't want to keep them for their sounds. And some people here in Australia, at least, reckon that they'll keep away snakes. In my personal experience, they absolutely do not. I've seen snakes slither right past them and they would just be looking at them. They do, however, feed on small reptiles, so it is possible that they eat baby snakes. But they will also eat baby lizards, which you do want to keep. And really, to be honest, we are full of snakes. So it's hard to imagine that we could potentially have even more snakes if we didn't have peacocks. So there you have it, very plainly put. They sound horrific. They make gigantic poos, preferably on your front door. And they don't really have much of a purpose, whether it's for snake protection or in the garden. So the only reason why you might want to keep them is that they are beautiful. And thankfully, they are so beautiful that, in my opinion, that completely makes up for all their other problems. The other reason, I guess, could be for money. Depending on your setup and depending on your luck from year to year, you can sell the babies. And when they sell really well. But occasionally they don't sell at all. So I'll talk about a little bit more of that later on. So if after all of this, you're still not put off and you would like to add some peacocks to your farm, listen on. So if you considered all the pros and cons and you've decided you'd like to go ahead and add some peacocks, so where should you keep them and how should you keep them? Lots of people keep them in aviaries. In my personal opinion, the only way to keep peacocks, and the easiest one for you and way nicest for them, is to just let them free range. But you can't let them free range from the minute you bring them home. You will need to keep them enclosed for at least a month when you bring them home. And that's because if you bring them home and you set them loose straight away, they will not know where they are. They will not know that you're a provider of food and they will just fly off. So you do need a large enclosure that is fully covered because these guys can fly from just a few days old. They're strong enough flyers that they can go up on high trees. So they're actual birds, not like a chicken, they fly. So you need to have a fully enclosed pen, which is also predator proof, because when they're enclosed or when they're on the ground, they are susceptible to predators. In our area, it's foxes. In your area, it might be something else, but so you need a large pen that is predator proof and completely enclosed so they won't be able to fly off. The size of the pen really depends on how big the chicks are when you bring them home and how many you're bringing home. But for example, just to give you an idea, our peacock pen, which we've been using over the years, is about 3 meters by 4 meters and it's about 2.5 meters tall. It's not huge, but it has proven sufficient for, say, 2 young ones, maybe 4 or 5 months old when we first got them. And this year we have had 7 babies, and I'll tell you a bit more about that later. 7 of them in this pen, and they're 2 months old now and they're starting to get a little bit cramped, but it has been very suitable. Now, within that enclosure, you need to make sure that you obviously have some shade. So if you can have trees in there, that's great. If you can't, you can just put some shade cloth around and make sure they have some shade and also some protection from the rain. So for us, we have just put some corrugated plastic, so like laser light, over one side. So if they perch on one side, they will be undercover. If they perch on the other side, they will be exposed. And they kind of use that, the more sheltered perch as their night perch and the other one as their day sort of look around kind of perch. And yes, you do need to put perches. Peacocks have a very strong instinct, roosting instinct, just like chickens. They want to go up high at night. They feel safer that way. And the best perches, not to mention the cheapest, that you can give them are just tree branches, because ultimately, once you let them out, that's what they'll be perching on. So just get some branches, nice and thick ones. Ours, I think, are a good 15 centimeters in diameter, more or less. And just put them up in your pen for them to roost at night, but also for them to move about. That will encourage them to fly up and down. And even though they will lose fitness by being enclosed, when you first get them, if they have enough room to flap about and do short flights, that will help them keep some fitness, because once you do let them out, then you want them to go up high on trees to be safe at night. So they need to have retained a little bit of fitness so they can do that flight on the first few nights until they just regain fitness from being outside and free ranging again. So those are the main requirements for when you first get them. The other thing that you need once you let them out free range, like I said, you need a property, you need some room. You can't really have them, I don't think, in suburbia. I don't know if there are regulations, but really, unless your entire suburb wants peacocks, there is no point. They will never stay just in your backyard. So you need some room, and you also need to make sure you have some nice tall trees for them to perch on. Otherwise, they will end up on your roof at night, and that's not a good thing. If you're on tank water like us, of course, a peacock that sits all night on top of your roof and poos like crazy and all of that gets washed into your water supply, that's not ideal. But also, a roof is usually an exposed area, so they will be exposed to rain and to cold and to heat. It's just not nice. So way nicer to have some nice big trees, and the trees will offer some sort of protection. They're pretty hardy, but you know, if they have a few leaves and things, they will be happier at night. Other than that, that's pretty much it. They're very low maintenance once you've got them up and running. Of course, while you have them locked up, you will need to feed them, and your breeder will tell you what they've been used to. For us, we found the turkey starter or game bird starter. Pellets are really the best thing. We have also fed them live mealworms that don't seem to like the dried up ones. They're really predators, so they're looking for that wriggle. Those are also a really good option. Corn is really good as well. And another thing that we feed ours, and we didn't really set out to feed them that, but it's just the trait that they get while we're feeding other animals, is a pelletized old horse feed. And it's basically steamed grain, so they're more digestible, mixed with hay and mixed with molasses, so it's nice and sweet. And I certainly wouldn't feed that to the peacocks in a pen as a main source of food. You know, the game starter or the turkey starter would definitely be their staple. But that makes for a nice treat. These pellets are quite big though, so you wouldn't want to give it to little babies. And of course, plenty of water in a sturdy bowl, because they're quite large birds and they can tip the water out. And that's it. Once they fly out and they are free ranging, they will find most of their food. They will look for insects and small lizards and frogs and things outside. And we just give them a handful of these pellets that we're feeding the goats. They know the routine. When we go to feed the goats, they come over and say hello, and we give them a handful of that. Or we might give them a handful of whatever grain we've got on hand. It makes up less than 1% of their diet, so we're not too worried. But certainly a nice treat. They like it, and it keeps them mostly at home. Once they're free ranging, they will also mostly find their own water. If you have a dam or troughs for your other animals, then you don't need to worry about it. But of course, if you live in the desert, there's nothing at all anywhere, then do provide some water. Just like every animal, they need food and water. So that's it. They're really quite easy to take care of once they're established. Now, also, what should you get? Should you get boys or girls? Well, both two or three boys and two or three girls alone without the opposite gender do just fine. So you can certainly just go with that. Most people tend to want the boys because they look so much prettier. But we were actually told when we started that we needed at least one girl for our boy, because he would have gotten lonely and he would have gone flying off looking for girls come breeding season. I don't know if that's true. I know several people who have multiple boys and no girls, and the boys seem to stay home. But it is possible that a lonely boy would go looking for love elsewhere. So anyway, we started with a boy and a girl. And if you have both genders, just be sure that you will end up with chicks. My very naive original plan was, no, I don't really want to breed them. I've got enough animals. I don't want to go through the angst of having babies. What I'll do is once they start laying, I will collect the eggs and eat them just like you would eat chicken eggs and all will be well. Well, we did eat a few and they're yummy. They're not anything too special to my palate, but they're lovely and they're big, so you don't need as many. So that's all great. But unfortunately, it doesn't work that way. So first of all, it's hard to find where the girls are nesting. They nest in really hidden places out in the open, but in bushes, or, you know, they just find a spot on the ground, usually near you or near whatever they consider to be their home, and they will just sit extremely still. So they're very hard to find. So often by the time they find them, they've already hatched the chicks. Also, they're not like chickens who are designed, or rather have been bred, to lay eggs upon eggs upon eggs. And so they seem to only be able to lay so many eggs a year. And after that, they really deplete themselves and they can even die from it. So we found that the hard way when 1 year, one girl kept nesting in a spot where the crows kept stealing her eggs. And so she kept relaying and then moving and laying again and moving again and laying again. And she ended up probably laying 4 or 5 clutches instead of the one that her body was really designed to lay. And she died that winter in spite of all the good food we were giving her. And I'm convinced that it was because she had just depleted her resources so much from laying so many more eggs than she normally would have. So that plan of mine of getting the eggs and eating them and them giving up doesn't really work. To the point that they're really determined mothers, to the point that this year, we had one girl who was nesting and she must have been attacked by a fox, because one morning we found a whole heap of feathers and we found that she was missing a whole heap of feathers off her back. Luckily, she was not injured. And there were a bunch of broken eggs around, so she had lost her whole clutch. So she had already gone through the trouble of laying a whole set of eggs, sitting on them for a period of time, be attacked by a fox. And so she was visibly mourning for a period of time, for a few weeks, as she was sore and sad. But she recovered. She came good. And she has just today hatched 5 more chicks. So she pulled herself together and went and did it all again. So they are really determined mothers. And in the same way, they are really determined about where they're going to be nesting. So because they're so vulnerable to predators when they're nesting, because they're just on the ground, we have tried over the years to either put a shelter around them so that the fox couldn't get them, or move their eggs and try to see if they would sit on their eggs in a pen, again, to try and protect the mother. And in both cases, we have failed, and we tried that multiple times. They absolutely are determined to sit where they have decided, and there's nothing you can do about it. So all you can do is just hope that they pick a good spot and hope that they're close enough to your house so the predators don't get there. And that's about it. Most of the time we've been lucky, but we have lost a few girls to predators. And that's also why girls are hard to find. And even though the boys are most beautiful, a lot of people who are breeding are always looking for girls, because the girls, unfortunately, have a shorter lifespan than the boys, because at one point or other, when they're on the ground, either with eggs or with chicks, a predator might get them. So we have had, every year we have had chicks hatch. And again, with the chicks, we have tried both ways. We've tried the really hands-on approach where we would just lock them up in a secure pen every night for the first few weeks until they're strong enough or to fly up high. Even though within, you know, a week the mother is already taking them up trees, it is a big effort for them. So we've tried locking them up every night for quite some time, supplementing their feed with lots of different things, from worms to actual pelletized feed and things like that. And we've always had a very up and down luck with the babies. And we've always had a higher than 50% mortality, which has been beyond heartbreaking. But But I think this year we finally cracked them. And the reason why we finally discovered what may help them survive was actually due to a bit of a tragedy. So this year, we had one mother hatch, not the one that was attacked by a fox. She's just finally managed to get chicks today. Another mother that we have, she sat on eggs and produced 7 chicks. That is a huge number. They normally only lay 5 eggs and then 4 to 5 will hatch. They seem to be able to count. They only really lay 5 eggs. And the one that's hatched eggs today, there's 5 of them. This lady, on the other hand, she laid clearly 7 eggs and they all hatched. So over she came one day presenting all her 7 chicks to us. And while we were thrilled to see them all doing well, we were also really worried because we thought, oh, goodness me, are they going to make it or not? And we were so happy. This year we gave them turkey starter, which we hadn't tried before. We used to give them game bird starter. And they both have really high protein content, which is kind of what you want for these birds. But maybe the turkey starter has got something different to it, and they've done so much better. So there they were with mum, doing really well. Every morning we would check on them and count them and marvel at the fact that there were still 7 healthy chicks there. And we were so thrilled. And then one morning when the chicks were about 2 weeks old, we hear all this noise. It was about 5:30, 6 in the morning, really early. We hear all this noise and then we hear this excruciating cry for the babies that just wouldn't stop. So we ran outside and we realized that a fox must have come and taken the mother. So even though they were already sleeping up on trees, obviously they would come down to the ground at first light. And being that here in Australia, summer, 6 o'clock, it was very much light already. So they must have just come down from their perch, and the mother is very protective, so the fox must have come and tried to get the chicks, and the mother would have attacked the fox, and she clearly lost. We couldn't find her. We found a pile of feathers and some very distressed chicks. And at that point, we thought, well, that's it. There is no way we can hand raise these babies. We can never get 100% survival with mum doing all the right things. What chances do we have? But at the same time, what options do we have? We couldn't just leave them there to be eaten by that same fox that very night. So we managed with a bit of work, because these guys were only like smaller than my hand, perfectly camouflaged, you know, brown color, and they could fly. Some of us were on our roof. So, you know, not particularly easy to catch. But we managed to corral them into our sunroom and then lock them in there. And then one by one, we caught them. And we put them in that peacock pen that I mentioned earlier. And then we went out and got them some turkey starter, which they had already familiarized themselves with when mum was there. So that was great. And then we kind of looked at each other going, oh dear, what do we do now? They normally stay with mum for life, pretty much, if you let them. And certainly, normally we sell them at 4 months old, which is when you can tell gender and when they're too big to sleep under mum's wings. But up until 3, 3.5 months, they easily still sleep under mum's stretched out wings while they're up on trees. So they have a very strong bond with mum, and mum really does provide both protection and food for them. So we were very worried. And after a bit of research, we kind of worked out a way to keep them warm, because we thought, well, they still have down, so their wings are usually fully feathered pretty quickly. They're almost fully feathered when they're born. So by 2 weeks of age, they had fully formed and fully feathered wings, but their bodies were still just with down. So they were cold and we were worried. And even though we were in summer, we were having a bit of a cold spell. So we tried to borrow a brooder and we put a little extra shelter in their little pen. But basically in the end, what we ended up doing was grab them every night, put them in a cat carry box, take them into our spare bathroom, put them inside our spare shower that has a glass screen, lock them in there with a heater next to them, get them to spend the night in the shower, and then grab them again in the morning, put them out in the outdoor pen during the day, clean up after them in the shower, and do it all again the following night. So that was lots of fun, and we did that for a whole month until eventually they had enough feathers on themselves. They were big enough that we felt they could just keep each other warm, and so then we started putting them inside the little house that we had put in the peacock pen. So they still wouldn't go in there naturally, even though it was sheltered and warm. Their instinct was still very much to go up on a perch. So every night we would pluck them off the perch and put them in the little house. So we did that for a few more weeks. And then a few weeks ago, when they were about maybe a month and a half old, we decided they were officially fully feathered and the weather had already turned to officially warm. So we decided that was it. So now they're just sleeping out on their perches. And they all survived. They're all doing really well. And I am convinced that what made a difference was the fact that somebody, when mother and mum died, advised us to worm them. So maybe that was it. Maybe there were worms that they were contracting from the wild birds, and that was what was killing them. So hopefully now that we know that, we can worm even the ones that are with mum, and hopefully that will help them survive. So we don't normally worm them when they're grown up. We worm the first lot that we got. They were 4 months old when we got them. We worm them then. But normally once they're grown up, we don't worm them. And our boy is now nearly 9 years old and he hasn't been wormed for many years and he seems to be doing just fine. So I don't think in our area, at least, that they necessarily need it once they're fully grown. But maybe when they're little, they do. They just need that extra boost. We just use the spot-on treatment, which we have. It's actually a cattle treatment. It's an ivermectin, and we normally use it for the local wombat population, for our chickens, and you need to adjust the concentrations. Now, because these guys are so little and this product is so concentrated, the first time we did it, I was really worried about killing them by overdose. Thankfully, this product has a very safe range, and I just diluted it in water by quite a lot. I didn't even calculate it because I didn't know how much they weighed anyway. So I figured, bucket chemistry, let's just give it a go. I just put a few drops in a cup of water and then took a few drops of that and put it on the chicks. And to my astonishment, not only did they survive, but they actually perked right up. So I think maybe at 2 weeks of age, when mum died, they were already starting to feel a bit queasy with the worms. And then we managed to kill the worms for them. And that really helped. So now they've been in the pen for over a month. They're getting a bit crammed. And just the other day, I thought, okay, well, we're either going to have to let them out and hope that they can survive still being quite small out without mum, maybe tagging along with our other peacocks and peahens mostly, or we're going to try and sell them even though we still can't tell gender. And so I just put up an ad and I was really surprised to sell them all in a few hours. I got so many inquiries, I could have sold three times as many. I was selling them quite cheap because they are not sexed, but certainly not super cheap. I thought it was a fair price. But lots of good homes have come forth, and so all of seven of them have got a home now. Two have already gone, and the others will go in a few days. So I'm really happy with that. And as I send them off to their new home, I'm giving them another shot of the wormer just to be sure. And I'm just really happy that maybe we finally have discovered what it was that was make them die, because we knew it wasn't predators because every time we found the little bodies. Hopefully this new clutch just hatched today, even though they're with mum, and we're thrilled that they are, and we hope that mum does a great job. We will probably try and catch them when they're about a couple of weeks old, and we will all treat them for worms, and hopefully that will make the difference in their survival. So that's it. They're not very difficult animals to have at all. They are beautiful, and they'll certainly are beautiful enough that they'll make you forgive them at their shortcomings. So I hope you go out there and look for some. And if you're in the Canberra region and you'd like some, let us know. The ones that were born today, if they survive and mum survives, as we hope they do, they'll be available for sale in 4 months' time.
And that's it for another episode of the Homesteading Rollercoaster. If you enjoyed the content, we'd love it if you subscribed. We'd also really appreciate a rating and review on your podcast platform. Or send us a message. You can find us on Facebook and Instagram at Tatum Hills Farm. That's T-A-T-U-M Hills Farm. Or on our website at www.tatumhillsfarm.com.au. Thank you for listening. Bye.